Greetings, salutations, and welcome to the Plain Stalkers Podcast. I'm your host, Will Benson, joined as always by the gentleman, my friend, my confidant, my Sancho to my Don Quixote, Aramis. How are you this evening?
Sorry that we're late, but I'm good. How are you doing, sir?
Yeah, we're a little late. I blame you.
But I had things, and stuff happened, and yeah.
So we had a, you know, I don't want to get into too great of details, but there was a, you know, illness in one of the families, and so we just couldn't get things going this week. So, but we're here tonight. It's Saturday, and this is what you get to do when you're old and you don't have to go out, and because, you know, you got kids. So we can record on a Saturday when all of our friends, families, coworkers, and young adults are out enjoying the night air. So
yeah,
that, so I guess, let's get it started, you know, and just begin right into our, you know, turn here. And
yeah, so
all right,
here's what I'm thinking. I'm going to be a little bit wild here. I think we have so much to cover.
Yes.
I think we should just drop a stasis on the field, skip that untap, and go right into main phase.
You got it.
Main phase.
All right, we're in our main phase. Welcome to main phase. It's a lot different from our begin turn phase, which is, you know, no, nothing like any of our other phases.
Well, the first one's mostly steps. This one is more like the meat and potatoes, so.
Yeah, it really, really is, too. And it's a, boy, we do have a lot to go over. I mean, there was a Mythic Championship last week.
Mm-hmm.
There was a bunch of announcements. You know, obviously, you know, Core 2020 was, I mean, just, we should just go right through it. So, I mean, first of all, we should talk about last week's Mythic Championship. And
yes.
I mean, I want to talk about it all. Coverage, champions, decks, that sort of thing. So, you know, why don't you take it away? Because you know what? You put all the topics up, so.
Okay. So, yeah, this past weekend was Mythic Championship numero uno. It was the first one. It was in Cleveland. I think it was 500 players.
Yeah, there were quite a few players.
500 players, which is bigger than a regular Pro Tour, which I guess is what their whole thing is going to be now. Mono blue aggro.
Yeah,
won the tournament.
Was nuts. Actually.
Talk about
all
a,
over.
Talk about a breakout performance from mono blue aggro.
I wouldn't say that though. But
well,
I mean, go on. You know,
we're going to get into this in our combat phase because spoiler alert, Mono Blue Aggro is going to be the center of attention this week.
Hey, we're not talking Nexus. I'm sure we'll work Nexus in, but we're not talking Nexus.
I kept the dead horse in the barn, so I don't think we're going to beat that horse a little bit. But if we get
we'll beat that horse a little bit tonight. So.
But anyway, Mono Blue Aggro won the tournament. It had multiple spots in the top eight. The tournament really showed how powerful the deck is in the hands of a skilled pilot. Autumn Burchette was our champion.
Yeah, they were amazing the way they were playing.
Yeah, it was very interesting to watch them play. Just the depth of the gameplay, the coverage was good. I think they did a great job for the first Mythic Championship.
I would agree with that assessment. I mean, I watched a lot of it. I watched almost all of the top eight.
Mm-hmm.
I watched a lot of Saturday. It was a non-kid weekend, so I got away with it a little bit. But it was incredible to watch. I mean, I think the big story is not just Mono Blue Tempo, which we will get to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think what we really need to talk about is, like, the field and what was happening there. Because, first of all, Sultai Midrange had a monster presence, something like 35% of the field.
I think it was closer to 40%, actually.
Yeah. And so, and yet, top eight, it was only there once.
No, it wasn't.
Yeah.
Sultai did not top eight. The best top eight, the best result for Sultai Midrange was, I believe, somewhere around 12th place.
Yeah.
Which, I mean, wait, for a Mythic Championship, 12th place is nothing to sneeze at. But it's
surprising given how many people were playing that deck.
Yeah.
And how many skilled people were playing that
These
deck.
People were the best of the best. These are the MPL was there, the Magic Pro League was there, all 32 players.
I love it that all 32 did not top eight.
All 32 did not top eight. There were a couple that did.
Reed Duke, that would top, we'll talk about that before.
Yeah, like Louis Scott Vargas, I think that was, what, his fifth top eight in a row or something like that?
And he had a... I love that Izzet Phoenix deck. I can never play it, but I love that deck.
He stuck with Izzet Phoenix. It ended up sort of being a rogue thing because there were only a couple of players that even brought that deck to the tournament, like literally less than five, I think. And he brought it all the way to the semifinals, which was very impressive. The diversity of the metagame, fantastic. It's what I was.
Yeah, standard metagame is ridiculous.
This is, I think, the best standard that has ever existed.
I would have to agree with that.
I mean, you could literally walk in with whatever you want, as long as it's quote unquote established, and there's like 17 decks that are, and have a decent shot at winning. I mean, really. A lot of it's just going to come down to how you pilot the deck, how your matchups work out, you know, the obvious little bit of luck here and there, but overall, amazing tournament.
It really was. It felt really good to watch as a fan. First of all, I think it does show that coverage is needed. You need I don't know why Magic or the Wizards or Hasbro, whomever, you know, the stuff that they're doing as far as playing around with coverage. First of all, that's another big story. 50,000 viewers is what I read this week. 50,000 viewers. Like, you had 50,000 people watching an online streaming platform, watching people play a card game.
Yep.
Like, yes, you should be streaming. And I'm glad that Channel Fireball picked it up and they ran with it today. And I watched a little bit of it. We could definitely talk about that.
Yeah, we have to talk about that.
But, I mean, just the idea that, you know, so I'm watching this. And, first of all, yeah, the production values are not, you know, it's no change. Like,
it's about this. It's almost exactly the same.
Yeah, I was, like I said, I was hoping kind of for a John Madden type of, you know, BDM comes out and he's got a light pen. He's like, you know,
hey, he casts the Fire Slinger here and bam, he attacks into his blockers here, boom.
And then here's a Gatorade. I mean, but no, there was no improvement as far as that goes.
No.
So, I mean, obviously they put the money into the prize pool and I get that. But, I mean, the production value, I mean, was the same. They did a little bit more. They sent Marie out on the floor for the Magic Fest, and she's talking to fans, and that's kind of cool.
I think basically what you can say is it's sort of like with a car model. Like, here's a 2018 model, here's a 2019 model. 2019 model has a couple of extra wrinkles that the last year didn't have, but it's essentially the same car.
Right. It totally was. And, I mean, you know, the Mythic Championship is it all. I mean, yeah, I miss Pro Tours. I mean... Mm-hmm. And doing away with the qualifying, I mean, they did talk about that last week. I mean, there's a ton of things we could talk about because they came up with, you know, they finally came out with the qualifying news.
Oh, that's right.
You know, and what it's going to take to qualify. And basically, they've heard what a lot of the pros were saying, and they basically took away one of the levels. There are no more PTQs. It's just PTQs in a way.
Yeah.
But you can do it online or you can do it in paper. Now, if you qualify and win in paper, I think you can play online. However, I don't know about winning an online arena Mythic Championship and going into paper.
Okay, I think the way that it works, and this is based on how I was reading, because I was a little confused at first, too. When they first talked about all the new ways that you could qualify several months ago that this was coming, there was like no news and people were really confused. They released a lot of data, I think within the last week and a half, and that clarified a lot of things. It's still a little confusing.
Right.
My impression of it is the paper qualifying tournaments are for paper Mythic Championships. The arena qualifying tournaments are for arena Mythic Championships because there's a paper Mythic Championship and an arena Mythic Championship. There's a couple of them at the same time.
Right. And then, well, what gets me here is first of all, do they travel is the arena a travel?
No.
Because
that's true.
I wonder then, how do you avoid cheating? How do you avoid, because they're going to want somebody to Twitch this, they're going to want coverage.
It's going to be travel. It's going to be like how they do it with like Fortnite
and
stuff like that.
The Invitational. With the Invitational this week. Yeah.
Yeah, and with other esports big events, they're going to send everybody out to an arena. They're going to set you up with a rig. And you're going to get, like, a special Magic Arena account that's fully loaded with what you need to play.
Well, I hope so, because, I mean, that does concern me. I'd be like, you know, because I would. I mean, if I was playing it, I'd be like, I wonder if they...
And honestly, that's probably where all the extra money went. That's probably where all the extra money went, is to make sure that when they do the Arena Championships, that there's enough computers floating around.
They're going to need rigs and all that.
They're going to need 500
well, no, that should be sponsored.
Computers.
That should be sponsored.
Well, yeah, but still,
that
the money's
100% should be sponsored.
The money's got to come from somewhere.
Right. But I mean,
yeah.
The thing of it is like, But then it brings up an interesting question that I thought about this week. Is that, okay, yeah, Mythic Championship, sure, Arena, paper. However, I do believe there is one world. And as far as I know, the World Championship will be fought over a table. It would be very interesting to me to see an Arena player who is used to Arena giving you all of your trips and your, you know, upkeep and your all the things that happen in a Magic tournament or a Magic game where, you know, your triggers and all of that, they're automatically hit for you. So if, you know, if you have a search for Iskanta, you can't forget to scry.
Right.
But if you play paper, you can forget to scry. And believe me, the guy across the table, he ain't going to remind you.
Yeah, there was a situation that actually came up in GP, Magic Fest, whatever, LA today, where somebody was playing. It was a modern tournament, and this is going to maybe this will be a good pivot into the coverage of GP of LA. But
sure.
It's a modern tournament. They were playing Is It Phoenix. They forgot to bring their Phoenix back after casting three spells for combat, and they were saying that it's because of the way the trigger was. Like, depending on how the trigger is, some of them,
it's not state based. They think they're trying to say it's state based, and
let him forget, and they said your opponent doesn't have to remind you. But there's other ones where if it's part of the resolution of a spell,
right,
they absolutely have to remind you. So I think they were talking about the difference between Chromatic Star and Prophetic Prism. One of them, you draw the card when you cast the spell or sacrifice. I forget exactly how those two cards work. The other one is part of the resolution of the ability, whereas when you get the mana, you draw the card, it's part of the ability. And the other one is a different one. So there's one you can forget and one you can't forget. And I mean, that'll be something that's high level advanced stuff. But
it's
something that'll come up.
Especially with these people who are coming in from the esports arena, and I'm totally rejiggering my camera. Coming in from the esports arena who are not used to, you know, maintaining a trigger and maintaining a memory of things, and you know Search for Iskanta is a prime example. A lot of decks play it, and if you forget that scry. You forgot the scry.
Yeah.
You know, and it's sorry. Yeah. You know, what are you going to do? So I just, it's interesting idea to me. And I kind of, I'm kind of all about it. Like, I'm kind of like, I want to see that. Like, I'll watch Worlds now. I'll be like, go to town.
My thought is that if Worlds is like last year, they're probably going to have like 24 or so players going.
Yeah. And it'll be probably the top 12 of paper and top 12 of.
I think that it's going to be mixed. There's going to be a portion of it that's paper and a portion of it that's arena. Because you know they're going to want to integrate it, but at the same time not completely pass the torch because it's Worlds. Right. It's the World Championship, so you know that paper has got to be part of it.
Right, and that's just it. And I worry that eventually they're going to get rid of paper altogether for that, but that's another conversation.
No, yeah.
Well, I mean, you know, and it definitely, you know, it's looking at the Mythic, you know, getting back to our topic, looking at the Mythic Championship. I mean, when you look at the top eight, Mono Blue Tempo with Autumn, obviously. You know, Esper Control, which was a great final match, by the way. And, I mean, the both of them played that to perfection. Is It Phoenix by LSV? Another Mono Blue by Reed Duke. Did you watch that match?
I was only able to catch parts of Sunday's Cut. I mean, there was...
I think it's got to be somewhere.
Because I could probably find it on YouTube.
Yeah, because it's great. You know, we'll talk about that in a minute. But then the other four of the top eight was Azorius aggro, which white aggro. Gruul aggro, interesting deck. Again, another Mono Blue Tempo, and then Simic Nexus. Michael Bondi with that. I mean, he's like, one of these days, I'm going to make this work. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I'm watching those top eight, and especially the Reed and Autumn match is just... You're not used to seeing Reed Duke be a little bit humble. Like, Reed's been living in Reed land for some time. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he gets a little bit, you know, he is. He's kind of like, I've done this. I've seen this.
Well, I mean, he's
Reed Duke.
He's one of the best, if not the best, right now.
But they interview him, and they mention, he's like, you know, well, I really don't play a lot of standard, so I borrowed this deck from so-and-so, and he's like, and this is the worst draw for me. He's like, I'm going up against Autumn. He's like, I fully expect to lose. And he won game one. But I mean, they just really came in and just schooled Reed Duke on exactly how to play that deck. Mm-hmm. He missed. I mean, he got put back on his heels at one point. He brought in the Merfolk Trickster a little too early so that it couldn't stop something else. It was kind of great to watch because you sit there and go, okay, even the best isn't infallible, you know.
Well, and it also proves a major point about the mono blue deck is that this is not a deck you can just pick up.
No, it is not. If you're Reed Duke and you can't just pick it up, you got to play. I mean, I've got to tell you, I've been practicing it on Arena for Friday. I'm thinking very seriously about playing it Friday. At FNM, just because, even though I know that there's going to be at least two other ones there probably because everybody's starting to play this deck, I'm trying to learn how to play it properly
It's not easy.
Yeah. No, there are so many permutations, and again, we'll get into that. Mm-hmm. But you know, but I'm looking at Esper Control too, and Mr. Akawa, he was really doing well as well. The patience that those two exhibited during that match, the sitting back at some points, I mean, where Autumn is letting spells resolve, certain spells, and they knew exactly when to go in against him and when to try to counter a spell or when to go in. I mean, at one point, they are sitting on Tempest Djinn for three hands. At another point, they're sitting on the what the heck is it, that enchantment now? It escapes my
Curious Obsession.
Curious Obsession.
Yeah.
They're sitting on Curious Obsession. They're not bringing it out because they don't want to make a target yet because they can't protect it. And and they know that, you know, he's got three. Ikawa's got three out there, three untapped. He's going to mortify it. We got to stop it.
Yep.
So it was incredible to watch the finals. I mean, Autumn played a perfect match. And you know what? Somebody mentioned it in one of the podcasts I listened to. Is like Autumn Burchett is probably the best player you've never watched.
You know, I had never heard of them before this tournament.
Yeah, I've seen them around. I've seen them in matches, and they've always just kind of been, you know, the other side of the table across from the big story. But yet they'll come in and win. Mm-hmm. Like they just had a skill. I mean, they obviously it's the first, you know, Pro Tour. Mythic Championship that they won, but you know, well deserved, really was.
Yep, and they will be at Worlds, and it'll be interesting to see who else they have to play.
Yeah, well, I think, and I will be very surprised if next year they are not in the top 32 MPL.
We'll see.
I would think if you win a championship, well, you're in the MPL next year. It's almost a given.
The problem is just winning the one Mythic Championship isn't going to be enough. You have to maintain that performance throughout the season. Luckily, this qualifies them for the next Mythic Championship, and like I said, it also qualifies them for Worlds already. So I mean, if they can follow this up with another top eight or two, and you know, if they keep doing well in Grand Prix. If they go, you know, there's no reason to think that they wouldn't have a legitimate shot at the MPL next season.
Well, with the changes to the GPs, okay, or the Magic Fests, I don't think you're going to see that many of those type people there. If you can qualify for the next Pro Tour if you can qualify for the next Mythic Championship, you know, why go to a GP at all? You don't need it. The points aren't going toward anything. I mean, it's good to stay in the game. It's good to be a part of, you know, Magic. But that's just it. I think, in a way, I think Wizards is just starting to poo-poo on the more local things of Magic. Stop playing with your cards. They're coming over the mic. But, you know, I think they're trying, like, it started with the local game shops. I think they're trying to make this more national/international than it's been. Part of, I think, what was great about Magic was it was this activity you could do locally. But now they're kind of like separating it in some ways.
Well, maybe
I don't think you're going to. Sorry.
No, it's just I'm thinking I think you're right. But I think what they're doing is just they're basically making it that a clearer boundary between the casuals and the pros. And basically saying that if you want to play with these guys, you're going to have to play where they are. And if you want to get there, you have to go to GPs and win. Or you have to go to the qualifying tournaments and win. Yeah,
I can see that.
There's not as many steps to get in, which means it's actually going to be a little bit harder to get in.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because now the regional, the preliminary PTQs were open to everybody. The regional PTQs were only open to preliminary winners.
Right.
So you already had to go through a gauntlet to get to that level before you could even get to the Pro Tour.
But now the PTQs are going to be open.
Now the PTQs are going to be open for everybody, but that also means that there's going to be more lower-level pros at those tournaments.
Exactly. They're becoming the new Magic Fest.
Yeah, so it's going to be a little bit harder for the average guy to pick up a deck on a weekend and go in and qualify. But at the same time, if you do, the potential for the rewards is a little bit higher, but it's all about the amount of work that you want to put in.
I would have to agree with that. And it's a little bit wrong in some ways,
in a certain sense. Yeah, I mean, I can see where they're coming from. They don't want everybody to have a chance at the pie because it's a lot of money. Relatively speaking, it's a very large pie. It's quite tasty, from what I've heard. But at the same time, I mean, they want to make you feel like you had to earn it,
right?
You know, and the people in the MPL, they've already proven themselves over the course of the last 5, 10, 15 years. So I have no qualms about the way they've structured it. I actually kind of like lessening the amount of barriers. Yes, the barriers are harder to get through, but there are fewer of them.
I can agree with that. It just, there was something kind of cool about the idea of going to a Magic Fest or GP and, hey, I'm sitting across from LSV. Mm-hmm. Or I'm sitting across from Reed Duke.
Well, that may still happen. A lot of these pros may still go to the Grand Prix, but that might
be... Because it's just good, you know, to do.
And, yeah, it's good to do, and if you get an extra 10 grand out of it, why not?
Well, and I think, too, I mean, they're going to get a little bit of extra, you know, things, too, as far as, you know, part of their mandate as far as Pro Tour, you know, pros and being MTL is streaming. So by going out and, you know, touching a little flesh. Wow, that just got awkward. Touching a little flesh, shaking some hands, doing that stuff. They're going to, it's going to encourage people to go and check their stream out, which is going to equate itself. We lost you.
There we go. That was a weird reload.
And you're back.
And I'm back. That was weird. You froze on my end.
I did?
Yeah.
That's just weird. Didn't freeze on my end.
Anyway.
I don't think. All right. So I still have audio. So I'll pick it up from here. We're at 23. Okay. So, I mean, running into these guys at a GP, I mean, they're going to be looking to do things so that, you know, they get more Twitch followers. They get people to watch them because that is also a mandate as far as MPL goes.
Yeah.
So... who knows how that's going to look? It's interesting, and I, you know, it's hard to say. And I haven't been to a GP yet, and I haven't been to a Pro Tour yet. I'd love to go, but we'll see how things go. I'm still trying to get to Syracuse. So, but, you know, this wasn't the only stuff that came down this week. I mean, Wizards kind of had a week since we were going to record Monday, and, I mean, some of the stuff we were talking about was regards to that, but I mean, they came out with a few announcements. First of all, the biggest one that, and it was an aside on the daily, or I'm sorry, weekly MTG podcast, mm-hmm. they do, Corsa 2020.
Yeah, just sort of randomly, we're going to release this, by the way.
Yeah. So, you know, that is just...
That's a good thing.
Yes.
That's a good thing.
Well,
that's...
we all knew it was coming. They're obviously...
Yeah, but they were saying how, you know, last year's core set was sort of kind of an experiment. They brought it back. They wanted to see how it was going to do. It was very popular. Up until the Ravnica rotation, there were a couple of very powerful cards out of Core 19 that were seeing heavy play, like the new Nicol Bolas Planeswalker. There were some other, like Elvish Clan Caller was seeing some play, things like that. Kind of fell by the wayside after the rotation because Ravnica and Ravnica Allegiance are kind of good.
Yeah.
But,
a little bit.
Yeah. So, overall, the experiment was a success, so they're bringing back the core set. I'm very happy to see that, because that means that'll be an extra set in the suite of cards available when rotation happens in the fall.
True. Well, that would have happened anyway. If they didn't do core set, they would have done something else. Hmm. So, I mean, because they're on a pretty much four sets a year.
Yeah.
As far as I know. So, I mean, but with that, you know, we can kind of speculate a little bit. I think with the core set, they may, because of the response from Mono Blue, I will not be surprised if you see things like Curious Obsession, Siren Storm Tamer, maybe even Tempest Gen. Like, the big things that make Mono Blue work.
Reprinting
like,
them?
Yeah.
Hmm. I think it's too early to speculate like that yet. They don't tend to reprint things that quickly, unless it's, you know, Colossal Dreadmaw.
I was going to say, what are you talking about? Colossal Dreadmaw's been in every set since, like, you know.
Oh, my God.
Birth.
It was in three sets. It felt like it was three sets in a row, because it was Ixalan, Rivals of Ixalan, and Core 19. I'm like, oh, okay, we get it. It's the best you can do for a common 6-6 for 6 in green. Okay, that's great. Stop it. Stop it.
I totally get that. I could see them doing that because it's going to keep it sort of level.
Well, I mean, one thing
this rotation, the rotation we're going to have, it come fall.
Yeah.
Wow. I mean, just Teffy gone.
Dominaria.
Mono Blue will be gutted.
Yeah. You're losing Dominaria. That's Mono Blue.
Pretty
you're losing
much.
Losing Ixalan block. That's Mono Blue.
Right.
Because Mono Blue has almost nothing from Ravnica besides Terramander.
Right. And Nexus goes away. See, I managed to work it in. Yay!
Yeah, but Nexus goes away.
Nexus will be gone before that.
Not long.
I think March 19th we're going to have our little BNR announcement, and we're going to be very surprised when, you know.
Mm-hmm.
I'm pretty sure. I'll be very surprised if that doesn't happen. But I definitely, you know, I could see them with 2020. I'm glad they're doing it. They need to do it, you know.
If you're
not going to go to the two sets per block,
right?
Then a core set is the proper way to go. It's always a jumping on point,
mm-hmm.
you know.
I could totally see them actually reprinting Tempestion if they reprinted the whole cycle. That would even mean reprinting Goblin Chain Whirler. Keep in mind.
And Steel Leaf Champion.
But at the same time,
and nobody wants the white or Benelish Marshall.
Benelish Marshall
would fix white aggro, and nobody ever wants the black one. And you couldn't even tell me what the black one is, I'll bet.
Dreadshade.
Which nobody ever uses. Nope. It's the absolute worst of the worst.
Which is saying something, because back in the, you know, back basically the card that is based off of Nantuko Shade was stupid good. And this one, I mean, it only costs one extra mana. It's bigger, and it's like, it's okay. It's not a bad card. Don't get me wrong. It's not bad. It's just, it's not at the power level now where creatures are.
No, and I mean,
but that also makes that also makes it perfect for a core set, all five of those cards, because the whole thing of a core set, like you said, is a jumping on point, so the cards tend to be a little less complicated. The most difficult card to remember to work properly is Tempest Gen, and that's still not that bad.
No.
Because you just...
But here's... The thing about it is that I wonder, like, you know, I'm not thinking even this rotation, but the state of the metagame because of this, I mean, before we went back to Ravnica, I mean, we were seeing a lot of mono-colored decks, period, because of those three-drop creatures.
Mm-hmm.
Because of Benelish Marshall, people were playing white, especially with the life gain, especially with the horse, what do you call it there, Sunmare.
The Crested Sunmare.
Oh, God, I love that card. You know, you were seeing a lot of mono-red, obviously. You were seeing some mono-black, mono-green Stompy became back a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then Ravnica starts out, and all of a sudden, it's multicolored decks again. And, you know, other than Mono Blue Tempo and maybe Mono White, Esper Control, is it Phoenix?
Nexus.
Okay, to be fair, it's 4/4. Because the other, let's face it, okay, Mono Azorius Aggro is really Mono White with some splash. Gruul Aggro is really Mono Red with some splash.
Yeah.
Both
of their splashes in the sideboard, by the way.
Yeah. Esper Control is a thing, Simic Nexus, and Sultai Midrange came in, you know. But you're seeing more of these dual decks. And I think once the rotation happens, like, it's going to be Sultai and Azorius, probably Sultai and maybe Jeskai, I would think.
Well, I mean, really, anything is still open. Once the rotation happens, you might see more of the guild-based strategies.
Because
we're going to have three sets of guilds, remember. Because War of the Spark is still on Ravnica. We're still going to have the full set of Shocklands.
Well, I'm starting to think like you and, you know, uncommon, rare, maybe even some common, low-cost planeswalkers or might show up.
Yeah.
Either that or they're going to go the other way.
Well, they did say that this set is going to be crazy and they're going to do something they've never done before.
Right.
So I'm thinking that it's going to be planeswalkers just everywhere.
And I've heard talk even on some of the other sites that, you know, Wizards is kind of like, you know, okay, we've done a lot of planeswalker. Yeah. We might walk away from the planeswalkers for a while. And if you're going to do that, then absolutely fill the board, you know, go to town.
And then kill
like,
them
here
all.
Here you go, you know, and then be like, you know what? We're not doing planeswalkers for a while. And we're going to let them go out of rotation and maybe a year or two. And then all of a sudden, like with Shocklands and stuff like that, they'll be like, hey, here's some planeswalkers. Mm-hmm. And we'll all lose our freaking fool minds.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's an interesting idea, but it definitely leads us, you know, the standard game right now is about the most diverse that it's been.
Healthy.
Yes. So, you know, it's incredible, but you look at it and it's like, you know, what deck to play? What are you going to do? I mean, are you going to play Azorius Aggro, which is really mono white, which is a decent deck? Is it Phoenix is still sitting out there? Don't get me wrong. I think it's Luis Scott Vargas that, you know, that was the pilot. All right, that was not the deck itself. You know, hell, Mardu is back for some strange reason. You know, what you like to call the aristocrats. I mean, and don't get me wrong, that deck never wins. But, you know, and I'm hearing talk of a warrior deck, actually, this kind of based around Gruul, more mid-range.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of curious about that. I'm kind of thinking I might want to try to put that together because – first of all, I love the idea of using, what the hell is it, that unknown
shores? Unclaimed territory.
Unclaimed territory, that's it.
Yep, I know what deck warrior you're talking about.
Yeah, and you name warrior, and all of a sudden you've got
Chain Whirlers.
All sorts of craziness. Chain Whirlers are coming out. The Crawl is coming out. Everybody's coming out. I'd love to see that. I really would. I'm on board for that.
Okay.
But, I mean, the biggest deck, and I think this will bring us right into combat phase, is... You know, we need to talk about Mono Blue. So we're going to go to combat right now. You know, let's go and hit it.
Combat phase.
Okay.
All right. Here we go. So I'm going to take the lead on this. All right. Because I was the one who watched it. I watched a ton of last week's championship. I watched it. It was great. And I was the one who proposed this topic. I want to talk about Mono Blue Aggro because my thought is, and we can argue this, is that is this deck, the Mono Blue Aggro deck, Mono Blue Tempo, whichever way you want to call it, is it the new Mono Red of the pre-Ravnica rotation? So from last fall, is this that? And I got to be honest with you, I'm kind of thinking so. I think it's as far, and when I say that, I mean Mono Red before rotation, for those of you that don't know, I mean it was the deck it was the deck to beat.
Oh, I hated
you know, you
that.
had to plan for that deck. You
that
had
deck.
To plan to how to get around that deck because it had the proper ramp, it had the proper speed, and the curve on it was amazing. You had something at a one drop, you had something at a two drop, a three drop, and then you hit Hazoret on four. And if you had played it right, you had the right number of lands for turn five. You're hitting them for like 12.
Yeah.
It was ridiculously stupidly good, and you had it completely shifted the metagame.
Yeah, going from Bomat Courier into Earthshaker Kenra into Chain Whirler into Hazoret or Chandra.
Right.
Ugh.
Well, yeah. It's and then you know or the dragon there,
Glorybringer.
Yeah, and you had the Oncrop Crasher. I mean, and not only that, the freaking stupid wizard there, the Soulscar Mage.
Yeah.
I mean. It had so many weapons. You had to plan it. It completely impacted the metagame.
It warped it.
And so now we get to Mono Blue. And Mono Blue, the thing that's really great about Mono Blue is that it is one of the cheapest decks I've ever seen. The fact is, the rare in that deck is
$2.
Is strictly the Tempest Djinn. And it's like $6 or $7.
No, it's $2.
$2.
It's like two or three, maybe.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And, you know, in the new set, the Terramander comes in and it kind of replaces one of the one drops there. I think it replaced...
It replaced actually another rare. It replaced Warkite Marauder.
That's what it was, yeah. So, it came in and it's just... And, you know, it's not like Mono Red in that. Mono Red was for morons. Mono red, you really couldn't misplay. It was turn one, play this. Turn two, play this. Turn three, play this. Always attack, put your foot on the gas, and go for a ride and hope you can survive. That was a mono red play style. Now, I get that mono blue, and I'm already trying to head off Aramis at the pass. The mono blue is, there is a certain level of complexity and difficulty in playing that deck. So with regards to that, you know, mono blue is different than mono red. But as far as warping the metagame, as far as I have to plan, what am I going to do if I bring any other deck than mono blue to account for beating mono blue? And it's a tough decision. I've got to, you know, we're going to be doing Friday Night Magic next week. Aramis is going to finally come, Lord willing. And, you know, I was going to play Nexus of Gates again. But now I'm sitting there going, as far as mono blue tempo goes, it owns me. So how the hell do I account for this? How do I go against this? So, you know, what do you think?
Is it my turn?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, because I listened very carefully to your arguments, and all I heard was Charlie Brown, womp, 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 mono blue.
Wow.
Because you are wrong, sir. You are absolutely wrong. Mono blue is not the next mono red. Here's a couple of reasons why. One thing you already pointed out. It's a lot cheaper to build than the old mono red deck. The old mono red deck was chock full of mythics and rares. You're talking, you know, $25, $30 for Chandra's, $15, $20 for Hazoret's. They played four of each. You know,
had
Glorybringer. Yeah, Glorybringer, Soulscar Mage, Bomat Courier, Earthshaker Kenner. Those are all rares. The only rare in this deck main board is Tempest Djinn, which is super cheap to get. You could build this deck at a competitive level for less than $90.
Okay.
Which is awesome. This is the perfect deck for someone who understands the game but doesn't want to break the bank to play in a tournament. You know, you don't have to buy all these expensive cards off of, you know, channelfireball.com or whatever, you know, to be able to play this deck. You also touched on
something. I'm still waiting for to find out though how it impacts the metagame, because so far you're kind of making my point for me, but go on.
The other thing about it, it doesn't warp the metagame, because if you think about it, we've had several large-scale tournaments since the rotation and since the addition of Ravnica Allegiance. Every single week, it's been a different deck at the top. There have been different decks, you know, floating in and out of the meta, good or bad. There was a week that Sultai Midrange had multiple showings in the top eight. There was another week that it was all control all over the place. This week, there were three mono blue aggro decks in the top eight, but this is a lot like Modern right now. You could bring any deck to the tournament and win, the point that I was making earlier. The metagame is so healthy and so diverse that, yes, you have to be aware of mono blue, but you don't have to warp your sideboard or your game plan against it. You know you're gonna face it, probably, because right now it's the second most popular deck in the format, but it's not to the point where it's winning everything all the time. It's a beatable deck. It's a complicated deck to play. It's like Reed Duke said, he just picked it up. And he did very well, got to the quarterfinals. But Mono Blue Tempo is not necessarily a deck you can just pick up and cruise. Maybe an FNM. But if you go to like a PTQ with it, it's not going to happen. The health of the metagame and the diversity of the metagame, I think, is the biggest difference between this deck and Mono Red in the past. Because the old Mono Red deck, there were maybe six decks in the format. Realistically, six decks in the format that you could play. There's probably a dozen, because there's probably still decks now that haven't been discovered yet. They're still figuring out this metagame. It's normally solved by now. If you think about two, all the extra testing that happens now that didn't happen when Mono Red first came out because of Arena, if somebody was going to figure out the metagame and really break it, it would have happened at Cleveland.
Sure.
That is the perfect time to show, hey, guess what? Here is the best deck in the metagame.
Right.
Mono Blue is one of the better decks. I don't think it's the best deck. I think there's a couple different decks that can still lay claim to that title.
Okay, but here's my point. Okay, you know, if you go back and look at 2018 results for Pro Tours, okay, back when they were still Pro Tours. You know, I have to correct myself on Mythic Championships on this one. I feel good about myself. Okay, Mono Red didn't necessarily win. It didn't.
No,
It was always in the top eight. It was represented in more than one deck. Mm-hmm. Okay, when I say mono red, I'm including the black. Okay,
yeah,
I understand
that was,
you splash
that was
it.
Mono red.
Yeah. Okay, that's kind of what I'm saying by this, though, and I think you're kind of making my point for me. Okay, yeah, you know what? It did win a few Pro Tours. Okay, but it showed up in the top eight of almost every Pro Tour and almost every GP and almost every Star City game. Same as Mono Blue has been.
Not
Mono
this,
Blue
has not showed, in the same numbers, though.
There
not
were
in the
four
same
in
numbers.
This there were one, two, three. There were three in this top eight.
Three in the top eight. There were six Mono Red aggro decks in the last Pro Tour that it was in. Six.
Sure. And I guess in the top eight. Yeah.
And there were, I think, another seven or eight more in the top 32. It was
right.
everywhere.
Right. And I get that Grand Prix Memphis, I mean, it was all Sultai and Gruul. It was all mid-range. But it's still, there were two Mono Blues in that deck. In that, you know, I would say that in actuality, I think Mono Blue is the deck to beat right now. I understand that a lot of people are playing Sultai, but a lot of people have broke that code.
Well,
like,
here's
it's obvious.
Here's to piggyback on that. This is like a half agreement with you. Yes, Mono Black is Mono Blue is probably the deck to beat right now. And my whole argument, forgot to tell you this, does have a little asterisk next to it because I don't think it's that.
Okay, it's 61. Go on.
I don't think it's there yet.
What, Mono Blue?
Mono Blue
what
is
the hell
not.
Could it need?
No, I'm talking about being at the same degenerate level as Mono Red.
Okay.
I don't think it's there yet. I think that if it continues in this path of the level of play that we've seen over the past weekend, because remember, like I said, you've seen the metagame rotate a few different times over the past few weeks.
Yeah.
If it's consistently able to put up to half or more in the top eight of these major tournaments over the next couple of months, then yes, we might be looking at a deck that's going to be just a problem.
Right.
But I think right now, because the metagame is so diverse, because it's so healthy, it's the same reason that Mono Blue Tempo is not the big problem deck is the same reason that Nexus decks haven't taken over either. There's so much out there. Everybody's got their bases covered.
Well, I think with the Nexus, I think the problem with Nexus, I think, is twofold. First of all, it's kind of like dating. Like, I don't even want to go there, but basically, you never feel good. You know, it's kind of like going out with the easiest girl in your high school. You know, and you never feel good about doing it, being seen with her, because you're like. But yet, you know you're going to have a good time. You know you're going to enjoy yourself. You know things are probably going to get a little crazy and a little nuts. But you don't want to be seen with her necessarily. You know, you don't want to be associated with her. I think with Nexus, I think that a lot of people.
Are you?
And if you listen to.
Are
you
slut shaming Nexus?
Yeah, I'm a little bit slut shaming Nexus right now. I think a lot of people, if you listen to a lot of the podcasts that I listen to, like the Grindcast and things like that, you hear people talk about Nexus and guys talk about playing it and how they have a good time. There's usually like a panel. One of them is like, I have a good time. And the rest of the guys are just beating up on this guy because at the end of the day, they all know that this deck, playing Nexus is kind of shitty. It really is a kind of shitty move. It's like it's not interactive. It's not,
but yeah.
So they don't do it. So I think the reason you don't see
that's combo decks in general, though.
Yeah, I think the reason you don't see Nexus as much is just that. I mean, with Wilderness Reclamation, it'd be easy to break. But I think people are just like, and I think that's also why they're like, "Well, ban it," because I don't want to freaking play it either. Mm-hmm. You know, it's
well,
like
I think this really again this I think this emphasizes my point. I think if Mono Blue or you know, beating the dead horse, Nexus. If they were going to be broken, Mythic Championship 1 would have been the time that it happened. There were no changes with this Mono Blue deck between really the last time we saw it and this time. There have not been any changes to
right.
note. Maybe a couple
we
of tweaks in the sideboard.
We haven't seen anything since Terramander.
No, yeah, there hasn't really been any major innovations. I mean, Terramander, I think, brings it up to the next level where it's officially Tier 1.
Right.
But there, like I said, there's a bunch of decks that are there, and you could pick and choose what you want and have a very good shot at winning, whereas back in the old Mono Red days, if you were, it was almost to the point where it was like the affinity standard. Not quite there. I mean, that was broken and disgusting.
Right.
But the Mono Red had gotten to the point where you're playing Mono Red pretty much, or you're playing something that is very heavily skewed toward Mono Red,
or you're playing blue white control.
Yeah, you're going with a rogue strategy just to catch people
right.
off guard. This one, it's like modern. It's healthy. There's a dozen different decks you could pick. They're all legitimately good.
Yeah, I'm not saying it's not healthy. I'm just saying that I think blue. And I mean, think about it. Okay, we both play Arena. We both were leveling up. How are you leveling up?
Best of three standard.
Yeah. Are you playing with your Bant Nexus or?
Yeah, I'm playing Bant Nexus, which, by the way, is considered a dead archetype.
I've been playing Mono Blue. And it wins.
It does.
It wins. And it wins in BO1. I don't play BO3. When I'm playing BO1, I'm like, mono blue. Why? Because BO3 with Gates, oh my God, kill me. Mm-hmm. But
well, the biggest reason I play best of three is that you actually can progress a little bit faster in best of three.
Yeah. If you don't lose.
As long as you
win. What I don't like about best of three is that if it goes to game three, I don't think it's fair I lose two slots.
Well, if you win, you get two slots.
Yeah, but if you win, that's because you won two games. I think in a best of three, if you go to game three is what I mean. Like, if it goes to game three, I should only lose one.
Well, you lost two games, though.
Yeah, but you won one.
But you lost two.
If
you go best of three and you win game three, you should only go up one pip instead of two. Because you lost a game. It's the same argument.
I can agree with that assessment.
Yeah, it's the same argument. You lose.
Yeah, but just it's still the whole thing is, I mean, I really do. I think you're wrong. And I think in the coming weeks you're gonna see that you're wrong. I mean, now don't get me wrong, I know that there are people. All right, yes, this week is a standard and modern week, or a legacy and modern week, mm-hmm. as far as events go.
Yeah.
But I know before the next event, which I think is in 2 or 3 weeks, like the next major event, people are gonna be trying to break blue. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can.
No, I think it's optimal.
I think it is, because being monocolored, you don't deal with mana issues. Being, you know, all 1 and 2 drops, you don't deal with this. I mean, maybe a blue-black, you know, Dimir type of deck can have a really good, you know, I could see that working with some Thought Erasers and Unmoored Egos, things of that nature to try to hesitate, you know. Unmoored Ego, you're going to name, you've got to name Curious Obsession.
Not necessarily. You know, I would probably name Tempest Djinn before Curious Obsession.
Tempest Djinn is a game ender, though. If you can stop.
Well, because by the time you can cast Unmoored Ego, they probably already have an obsession in play.
Yeah, that's true. You're not wrong.
Well, here's the thing. We'll find out in 3 weeks, because the next major standard event is Magic Fest Kyoto. And the Japanese players are very good at figuring things out.
Right. And then there's obviously the Mythic Invitational coming in 3 weeks as well, I think. So
yes. I don't. Yeah, it's coming somewhere there, yeah.
Yeah, that's gonna be an interesting time, too. But I just... It's so interesting to me. I really do think blue is red for right now. Well, at least right now. And it could change. But I think you're going to see more and more people playing blue. Now, when it gets to the point where these people... And I mean, blue started off with that one dude playing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I forget his name there. He's a French guy.
He
was the one who put this together.
Was it Raphael Levy?
Yeah, I think it was. And he was the one who put this together. And then people are like, oh, look at the way he plays it. But they admitted that it's a really tough deck to play.
Yep.
But as time has gone on, people are like...
It's stuck around.
Yeah.
And
well,
because
it can hang against anything. There is nothing it can't hang against.
You remember the first
Soul-Time midrange?
You remember the first time I brought that deck over?
I hate you.
I was like, hey, look at this deck. And you're like, oh my God, wow.
Yeah. It can be played wrong. But
yes.
I think I'm going to declare myself the winner here. I do think blue is red. I mean, maybe we have to put it on hold for a while to declare who won this, because, I mean, time may have to tell. But
I'm going to demand a recount on that one, because I really think I came out on top there.
Well, what do you listeners think? Let me know. Is blue the new red? You know, please let us know. Send us email. You know, snail
Here's
mail.
A hint.
I don't know.
It's not.
It totally is.
Nope.
But let's go ahead. And just get, let's, okay, end combat here. Let's get back into main phase.
Main phase.
All right, second main phase. So we have got some other news. I mean, this was a huge week as far as,
yeah,
as far as news goes. You know, there was a new product announcement. There was a new Mulligan announcement, which I think we should start with that because it came out first. And then we could talk about the dates. But, which, you know, London Mulligan and War of the Spark, they kind of go hand in hand anyway. But they, last Thursday, there was a new Mulligan rule that is going to be tested. They're putting it into beta as far as putting it into one Mythic Championship.
Hell of a time for a beta.
Or not a Mythic Champion. Is it a Mythic? Yeah,
it's a Mythic Championship. Yeah.
Yeah. But because it's a, and I agree with them on this, it's called the London Mulligan, which. I heard a podcast also talked about this. I agree with it. They're like, why didn't they do it this weekend? Would you really want to call something the Cleveland Mulligan? I don't think so. Because, I mean, the Mulligan is always named after where they used it. It was Vancouver Mulligan before that that we're in now. So the London Mulligan, and we'll talk about this. I don't want to color it. But basically how the London Mulligan works is this. Say you deal yourself seven hands or seven cards. You look at it and go, holy cow, I do not want to play this. You take it. You shuffle it back into your deck. Instead of dealing yourself six cards, you deal yourself seven again.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're going to keep it, all right, you would then only take one card, put it on the bottom, no scry. That's your mulligan. So you still have six cards, but you chose the six cards. If you decide to go to five, then the next turn you're going to deal yourself seven again. You're going to look at your hand and take two cards, put them at the bottom, so you still only have five. But you're choosing the cards. I think the reason they're, and this is what they said, the reason they're doing this at London is because London is a modern event, and they're like, we have tried this backwards and forward in standard, and we know it can work, but in modern, it could break, and it could be just a catastrophe.
Yeah, that is true. You know, I didn't think about that because that's, that reminds
me of that.
A Delve
deck.
Yeah. Well,
oh my God.
Yeah. But then I was thinking, what's the name of that, there's an artifact that basically lets you take a free mulligan. I forget what the heck it's called. It's like serum powder or something like that.
Something like that. But you'll see those in that deck. But I mean, but think about this from just the standpoint of Delve decks, Tron deck, a Tron deck alone.
Well, Affinity.
Even the Boggle deck. Mm-hmm. If I get my Ley Line of Sanctity,
Storm.
I'll keep five. Storm. I mean, that's just it. It is going. That Mythic Championship, I think, is going to be off the hook as far as combo decks. All these combo decks that have been just impossible to play because of the mulligans, everybody's going to bring them out because they're going to be like, holy crap.
Well, I tell you what, I encourage it because the best way to test something is to test it in the most dangerous way possible.
Oh, that's just it. I'm all about this, and I love
this.
This is going to
be awesome.
It's weird that it's a modern championship, though. Like, the stakes have not been higher, and you're doing this on a modern, on a championship weekend. You're like, we're just going to try it. But I got to tell you, I mean, I was playing it a little bit this week around the table at work with some of the kids, and I like it. I like it. It's a much more – you're more likely to take – mulligans to really, really get your hand to where you want it.
Mm-hmm.
If you know that you're drawing seven, if you're seeing seven cards, you know, and then the fact that you know that two of those cards or three of those cards are in the bottom, it changes how you draw. It changes what you're expecting. If you're trying to figure out, hey, can I top deck this thing? Crap, I put two of them at the bottom. I better find something that shuffles my deck.
Right.
Like, it's an interesting, it changes the way the game is played. But I also like it a lot better. The Vancouver Mulligan, losing because you had to mull to four sucks.
Yeah,
it sucks.
So many times you're playing, this happened to me last night actually when I was streaming. I was playing a matchup that I was sure I probably would have won.
I was watching it.
Yeah, I'm sure I would have won that game. Well, I mean, you never really know, but I felt like I would have been in a much better position if I didn't have to mold a five because I had, you know, zero land and then one land. And
yeah, I was like, nice land. I do believe I texted you and said, nice land.
Yeah, I almost blocked you on that one, but that's okay. But yeah, I like the idea of sort of being able to craft your hand to being as ideal as possible given the restrictions of the mulligan. Because it's going to happen. You're going to draw a hand. And you're like, oh, man, if only I had, you know, a couple more lands. Well, you know what?
Yeah.
I don't need these cards right now. I can afford to put them on the bottom. Or maybe it's a bad matchup game one. Like, you happen to know what the other guy's playing. Well, these cards are useless to me anyway. On the bottom they go.
Yep. I'm in total agreement. I think, I hope this is what happens. And, I mean, here's the thing. They're just trying it at London. It's not going to be legal. If it works, they're still going to go back to the drawing board.
For now.
The way – what it was said during the weekly MTVG podcast and the video that they put out was odds are good if it works, we're going to see it for Core 20. That'll be when the rule comes into play. And I'm all for it. I really hope that Modern doesn't break it. And I think it's going to be worthwhile. But it's interesting, too, because the London Mythic Championship is actually happening the same weekend as the War of the Spark release.
Actually, this is the – I'm going to segue into this. Mythic Championship is going to be a pre-release as well.
That's what I mean. It's the pre-release for War of the Spartans.
So they will be they're allowing London, or I think Europe stores, to sell War of the Spark that weekend as if it was released. Those cards will not be legal for the tournament itself.
Exactly. They will be legal for they are doing a sealed.
They're doing like a pre-release Grand Prix at the same time, I believe.
No, they're doing it as part of this.
You're right. It's part of
it. They are doing like a draft.
Yeah,
they
so the limited portion will be War of the Spark sealed.
Yep, or sealed, you're right.
One of the two. It's limited. Yeah. War of the Spark limited of one kind or another, which is awesome, by the way.
That'll be what I want to watch on Twitch. I'm not going to watch in Modern.
I'll watch all of it.
Although I might watch it for the Mulligans.
Well, is it Phoenix is the best deck in Modern?
Yes, it really is. And I can build that deck, by the way.
For the most part. I mean, he got
I just need Thing in the Ice.
And Scalding Tarns. Which are now almost $100 a piece.
Yeah, don't even get me fucking started. I got to start buying those.
That's a good segue because something else that they announced the same week.
Modern Horizons,
boys and girls. So this set, we don't normally talk about Modern too much. We've talked a little bit already today. Modern Horizons is going to be a set that is not going to be standard legal, but it will be Modern legal. They're going to have Modern reprints. They're going to have brand new cards from Modern. They already spoiled two cards in the set. One of them is awesome. One of them is kind of eh. And the card that's kind of eh is a Planeswalker, surprisingly.
Yeah, I know. I saw that. The big thing that I read there was cards not currently legal in Modern. And all I could think is, oh my God, are they going back? That's, bring me some Legacy.
Well, I mean, that's going to depend on if they decide to go against the reserved list, which I don't think they're going to do. But here's something I do think they're going to do. I'm going to throw this out there. I bet you they're putting the fetch lands in this set. All 10 of them.
It'll sell the set.
It'll sell the set like crazy. Are you
kidding
me?
I might buy a box. Yeah.
Think about it. This is the perfect time to do it. You don't want them in standard to begin with. Okay. Put them in Modern Horizons. Yeah. I am willing to bet that, I mean, mark my words right here, March 2nd, 9:30 in the evening, 2019, the fetch lands will be in Modern Horizons. That is my prediction for the set. I don't care what else is in the set. Fetch lands are going to be there.
All right. I can't disagree with you on that. So I'm excited too. So
get hyped.
So there are a bunch of events going on this weekend, by the way, stuff I'm sure we're going to talk about when we record on Monday, even though this is Saturday. So you're going to get like some back to back here. Mm-hmm. But I think it's time for us to start, going into, getting ourselves taken away. So start picking up our cards, putting things away, getting the boxes, shaking hands. We're going to try to record on Monday again, go back on schedule. There are two events this weekend. There is a standard event for something called Nerd Range Games I saw on Twitch. So I was watching that, and Mono Blue was all freaking over it, man. So we're going to have plenty of stuff to talk about on Monday. There'll be some news. I mean, we are very excited. I can't wait till next Friday, man. I hope you can be there because I'm ready.
Yeah. It's been a couple of different really random things that have stopped me from going. This time, heaven forbid, I will be there come hell or high water.
All right. So we want to thank you guys for tuning in tonight, for watching on Facebook. We did have some viewers all through the stream. This will be up live this week, and we'll get the audio out. We'll be recording hopefully Monday night around 6:37. I have no idea when we do it. If you guys want to email us, it's podcast@planestalkerspodcast.com. We do have a Facebook page. Look up Planestalkers Podcast. We have a Twitch channel. We both stream. Mm-hmm. I would say a couple hours a week. It's not what it should be, but it's more than it was.
I may actually stream a little bit after we're done here. So,
which is good. I have to go pick up my daughter from work at some point. Okay. So, but maybe when I get back, I might be able to stream.
Yeah, I might hop on a little while to do a little bit of streaming. I'm gonna try to do a little bit more ranking up. So,
yeah, me too. So, because I'm still sitting in gold. Oh, I had a rough run with Gates. We could talk about that Monday.
Okay.
All right, so we're going to get on out of here, guys. We want to thank you very much for listening, for tuning in, for being a part of things. Aramis, any final thoughts for the day?
Fetchlands and Modern Horizons. I don't normally talk about Modern, but my God, Fetchlands. Look, I just don't want Scalding Tarn to be a $100 card. It shouldn't be. That's another discussion, but yeah.
And my final thought is Mono Blue is 100%. Going to be as big, if not bigger, than Mono Red. And Aramis, if you disagree, or if you agree, say absolutely nothing.
Lies.
Absolutely nothing.
Lies.
If you agree, he hasn't said a word.
Vicious lies.
Well, then I guess he, you know what?
Vicious,
for Aramis Perez,
lies.
I'm